So a lot of times you read a Gemara, and instead of like a halachic Gemara, you find an agadita Gemara. The question is like, what do you do with it? Both types of agadita Gemara, both the types of, you read some psukim, and the Gemara says all sorts of bizarre things that these psukim really mean. The pasuk seems to say Avram walked up the street. The pasuk says, well, Avram doesn't mean Avram walked, doesn't mean walked the street. Now the stream is like all sorts of drush. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes you have unbelievable stories in the Gemara. You know what I'm saying? Like, is the amount of things people having, the Gemara says they do. The question is, how do you deal with these types of Gemara? How do you learn Haggadah? How do you learn Medrash? How do you learn these types of things? What's the goal of it? Chazal tells us there are four types of ways to learning Chumash. Pshat, Drash, Remez, and Sod. It's important to realize Drash is not Pshat. The question is, what is it? What is Pshat? What is Drash? How do these things work? And we'll see in a second, are they really two different categories? Are they the same category? How do things work over here? So the truth is, you can't start anything except at least the most famous thing written about this, which is the Rambam in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek. He also writes it in the Morning of Hukim Perek Gimel as well. So Chelek Gimel, Perek Mem Gimel. There's a major discussion as the Rambam has in both places as to how to learn Agada. The Rambam says there are three types of people, three categories of Agada learners in the world. The first group of people, they take everything literally, and they end up believing all sorts of silly things. They believe stupid things. They believe things they should not believe. They take non-literal gemaras on a literal level, and they make mistakes. The Rambam doesn't respect these people too much. Then the Rambam says there's a second category of people who take the gemara at face value, learn everything pshuto kimashmo, and they're like, there's no way this stuff is true, and they reject the entire gemara. The Rambam says this second group, they're convinced of their own brilliance. Ironically, they're more foolish than the first. The Rambam has even less respect for the second group of people. And the Rambam says there's a small, small percentage of people. And this is like the way the Rambam speaks a little bit. There's a small, small section of people, percentage of people who are wise, who understand, you know, that on one level, the impossibilities that Chazal say are not to be taken literally. I mean, don't take things that should not be taken literal on a literal level. Know that it's non-literal, it's allegorical, whatever it is. The seemingly absurd statements are not to be understood literally. They should be taken allegorically, metaphorically, for all types of messages, philosophical messages, psychological messages, sociological messages, religious messages, ethical messages, moral messages, political messages. Educational, there's a million and one different ways how to learn Haggadah, all sorts of different messages Chazal trying to give us. Some are to be taken literally, some are not to be taken literally. Not everything they say should be taken literally, although everything does have a deep hashkafic or other message. Unfortunately, the Rambam does not tell us which examples of things to be taken literally and which are not. And there are all sorts of things that apply debated. For example, the famous Medrash of Avraham, the Kibshon Eish, the Rambam himself seems to take that on a literal level. The Rambam himself is true, if I'm not mistaken. I think. Maybe not. The Rambam somewhere in Mada discusses how Avram went to the Kibshon Eish. The story occurred, and he was with Nimrod, and he went in, he came out of the fire. Well, if you look at others, not crystally clear, but the Eben Ezra seems to glance right over the Medrash and say the Pasha Pshat is that Vayamas, as opposed to Vayamas, that Haran dies literally on his face. And Eben Ezra says, Pshuto Kimashmo, he died in his father's lifetime. You know, why the Torah records that, so people discuss. If I'm not mistaken, Yaakov Kamenetsky says, it's because it's the first time a son ever died. The Gross says, like, it's the first time a son ever died in his father's life. And Yaakov says, it means in his father's hands. Whatever the case may be. The Torah is teaching us some in his father's, not in his father's life, but from his father's in his hand. That's because what about Cain and Hevel and whatnot? Yeah, it's exactly how Yaakov explains the Grah, who explains his Eben Ezra that way. I think it's the Grah. Not someone else. In any event, definitely Yaakov explains something from the Eben Ezra. The kids are, in other words, and there's a good chance the Eben Ezra thought that story did not take place on a literal level. At least he thought it wasn't the Pshat. At least that. So it's unclear exactly what things did the Rambam, you know, think we're literally to be taken literally and not. Unclear. There's also worthwhile Ramchal to mention, and I have to second type of where the Agadas come from the source. The Ramchal says, just like there are similar to halachic gemaras, there are agadita gemaras, where Chazal wrote them down in order you shouldn't forget them. We should be aware of them, we should know them. However, by agada, it's not as much as a nigla type of learn. There are secrets that they didn't want the masses to misuse. Therefore, there are hidden depths, hidden secrets to be unmasked and uncovered. By the riddles have to be decoded, but not by the masses, but by the special gedolim, special people who have the koach to do so. And again, Chazal wanted on one hand it shouldn't be lost, on the other hand it shouldn't be totally available to everyone for potential danger that they would lead to. The similarity between the Rambam and the Chazal is that they should not be accepted on a literal level, but they should be accepted. But there are differences. Exactly whether it's secret or not secretive, or how much Chazal, etc. That's the general approach that two of them take. Does everyone agree? Does everyone not agree? So we'll get into that. The source of Agadah, where did the Agadah come from? Where did they first come from? So there's an unbelievable Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi Maseches Peyam, Perek Beis Mishnah Dalet says, as well as the Medrash and Vayikra Rabbah, Perek Chaf Aleph, Medrash Aleph, it's all from Moshe, it's all comes from Moshe and Arsina. All these Agadahs, you can trace them back from generation to generation to generation. They're passed down, they all come back to Moshe and Arsina. The Marat Tzchias, and his Agdama to the Gemara, his Mavot to Talmud, his Agdama to Talmud to Gemara, Perak Yedzayin, echoes his facts, and they all come from Arsina. And he adds that the Agadah parallels Halacha. One tells us how to live on a practical, halachic level, the other one tells us how to live on a theological, philosophical, ideological level. Halacha, obviously, halachic gemaras being the first, and agadah gemaras being the second. By contrast, Rav Sham Shaphal Hirsch writes that agadah is in a collection of drushas from the gedolim of earlier generations. In other words, they don't come from Har Sinai, the Tanoim, the Amoraim. This is what the drushas they made. They spoke in shul, they made a drusha, and it got written down, it got recorded. Rav Sham Shaphal Hirsch says it's different from the halachic gemaras because this is in his letter on agadah. These are not halachic gemaras. They're different in the sense that agadatic gemaras, they can contradict each other. In the halacha, you have a contradiction. X versus Y, it's like math. It's like math, mathematics. It's difficult. In terms of hashkafic contradictions, I'll quote, I think, the chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Jonathan Zaks, I quoted once the best, who said the opposite of a simple truth is a falsehood. The opposite of a profound truth is another profound truth. In a certain sense, halacha is much more objective. It is true. It is mutter. It's aser. Not as simple in the sense it's lacking sophistication, but it's true or false. It's in the world of math and sciences, it's much more of a while hashkaf and agad is much more the liberal arts type of understanding. Therefore, there's room for they can contradict each other. He says he points to their importance that they make up our ideology. By the way, which Rav Sham Shaphal Hirsch Lachitasa, who believes our entire purpose in this world is to learn the Torah's values, the Torah's ideology, the hashkafa of the Torah from halacha, from agadas, in order to inculcate that into our behavior and make an impact, make a dent upon the world. The world should look to us as a world like Goyim, as a role model nation based upon our ideology. Our job is to educate the world, and that's what Shem Shavuot being Lishitas. And therefore, the question as to where agada comes from really is a major machlokes. Did the Tanoim and Amoraim make it up, whatever came to their head, like Rav Sham Shaphal Hirsch seems to accept? For the Maritz Chiyas, based upon the Yerushalmi, based upon the Medrash Rabbah, that it really traces its way back to Har Sinai. One of the major ramifications of this may be the following topic. Let's just, questions?
Yeah. So, is it really, besides the source, the Yerushalmi and Yerushalmi Hirsch really agrees ideology's form by Agada?
Well, I think it's going to be, I don't know if anyone who disagrees with this Rambam and the Ramchal type approach, that everything is to be taken literally at all accounts. I don't know if anyone who says that, at least that clearly. It could be someone does. Whether or not it's metaphorically and it was created by the Tanoim or goes all the way back up to Har Sinai is the debate topic, and we'll see a potential ramification momentarily. Yeah. How do you know which is which? Sometimes it's debated. For example, the famous one, the end of Shemeshachis Ksubas, the Shalosh Shavuos, where famous anti-Zionistic Gemara, we promised the Goyim as long as they wouldn't mistreat us, as long as there wouldn't be anti-Semitism, as long as it wouldn't be oppression, Jewish oppression in the world, so we would not return to Eretz Israel and build a country here. That's what the Gemara says. Now, is that a halachic Gemara or not? So most of the Sionim claim that none of the Rishonim quotes that as a halachic Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah, no one quotes it. And the Yom Moshe, Moshe Karlin says that this is halachic gemara. According to Megillah, it says, according to Rambam, maybe we can talk about Zionism here directly. But it's unclear if that's a halachic gemara or not. One of the major questions, also, if, you know, why the end of Ksubas? If you're out, if you're based, In any event, there's an unbelievable statement that Shmuel Hanagid makes and the Ramban echoes. I'll have to see exactly how to take it. Shmuel Hanagid says, in contrast, Shmuel Hanagid, if you look at the beginning of the Masechet Brachos, when I say the beginning, I don't mean it. If you look at the beginning of the Masechet Brachos, you'll find the Gemara. At the end of the Gemara, you find the Rosh. And if you continue flipping back, Shmuel Hanagid has an introduction to learning. So there Shmuel Hanagid says, he talks about what a halachic gemara is, he talks about what a mishnah is, he does all sorts of different things. He says there's something called agarta gemara, which by contrast, in contrast to halachic gemara, that one must learn all of them. There's such a thing as agarta gemara, and only learn the one that makes sense. Whatever makes sense, keep whatever the rest doesn't make sense, don't rely upon it. Get rid of it. Move on. The question is, what does he mean by that? Probably the most standard approach, and the most simple way of what he, the simple translation of the words, is that agada, if you like it, keep it. If not, just get rid of it. Don't care about it. The question is, how does one understand that? In terms of like keeping somewhat of a traditional perspective on that. You know what I mean? Like, halachic gemaras, you don't like it, you're stuck at halacha. Agada gemaras, just, you know, forget about them. Cut them out. You know? Hide the back of the page. Hide the rush, hide the shechina. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, here's a story, supposedly, I don't know if it's true or not, supposedly the Rugged Shabbos, if he didn't like a Tosfos, he cut it out of the Gemara, comes right out. And they asked him, like, what about the Tosfos on the other side of the page? It says, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shechina. I can't get started on Rugged Shabbos stories, but they're the greatest. He's one of the funniest people I've ever had. I can't. So I don't know. So, you know, but get mamish. That's what Shmuel Hanogit felt you could do when I got it to Gemara's. Okay, so cash on the Rugged Shabbos. I'm not sure the Rugged Shabbos, you know, usually people just ignore that stuff. But like, this is like his sheet of learning. It's not just like his, I don't want to say shtick, but you with me? So the standard approach is that what Agada is really just Hashkafa. And that's assumption number one. Agada is really just a manifestation of Hashkafa of the Tanoim. A. And B, you have the right to disagree in all hashkafa. There's no psak in hashkafa. There's enough flexibility that there's no psak in hashkafa. You can agree, you can disagree. Internalize what you agree with and what you don't agree with, that's fine, move on. At the end of the day, it's just hashkafa and you're allowed to disagree. However, Rav Dessler in the Michta of Me'elio, I think it's Dalid Shin Nun Hei, disagrees and says, no, that's not what he means. Shmuel Hanagid does not mean that chas v'shalom. Thinking of Shmuel Hanagid would have such a liberal approach towards learning, towards Agada, Chas V'Shalom, and a much more traditional person, the Dessler, takes a much more traditional approach, which is to say, that's not what Shmuel Hanagid means. Rather, he's telling you in terms of how much time allocation. How much time should a person spend on Halacha Gemara at the end of the day until you get it because you need to have a Paschi? However, for Agada Gemara, at the end of the day, if you don't know exactly the stuffing message over here, so don't spend 4 weeks on it, go right there. It's just in terms of productive use of time and allocation of how much time you have to learn and proportionately where should you spend your kochos and energy. That's really where the machlokas comes down. That's really what Shmuel Hanagid says. He's not making such a strong, liberal statement about the weight and authenticity of Agadah. The Ramban, further in his debate with Pablo Christian, says there are three types of books in Judaism. First is Tanakh. Tanakh, we believe everything with perfect faith, what it says. We accept everything. And that's Tanakh. Number two is the Talmud, which is a commentary on the mitzvahs, and that's accepted. And the third is Medrash Agada, Medrash and Agada. And there the Ramban says, in his debate, he says, you can choose whether or not you want to believe them. You can choose whether or not you want to accept them. And there's no laws if you reject all of them. Take it or leave it. At first glance, this seems to be the non-Rav Dessler approach towards understanding Agada. And maybe that's what the Ramban means. Therefore, one could build an argument, Shmuel Hanagid, Lefi Pshuta, the Ramban, Lefi Pshuta, really accept such a thing. However, there are those who minimize this as well. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the Emet Yaakov, on Sefer Bereishis, Perek Memdalit Pasuk Yud Ches says, the Ramban does not accept this. Realize the context. The Ramban was in the middle of the public debate with Christian theologians. The Ramban, that he would have said, accept everything in Medrash, they would have never accepted it. It looks so silly. And therefore, the Ramban made a trade-off. He said, I'm willing to say something I don't fully subscribe to in order to win the debate. Parenthetically, it's worthwhile to note, how much are we willing to deviate from the truth, to shy away from MS in order to win debates, and the larger good, the short, the long, okay, worthwhile to note. In any event, one may argue that that is exactly, how much does one have to accept these haggadahs may depend upon really a little bit how authentic they are and whether or not they come back from Har Sinai. If they come back from Har Sinai, well, you couldn't imagine anyone saying like him or not. But if they're drushes of the Tanaim and Amoraim, at the end of the day, okay, so you don't like this Tanaim specific hashkafa. The Tanaim thought about all sorts of issues, hashkafic issues, political issues. There are all sorts of debates going on with the Roman government, how to interact with during times of Tanaim and etc. A lot of stuff like that. And therefore, this machlokes had to understand these two thinkers, as well as people who take the more traditional approach, who seem to say, I guess almost the things that need to be said, which is, of course, we accept all haggadahs to gemaras, which is I think most people would have assumed. Definitely the way the Rav Yaakov and the way the Rav Dessler even learned these rishonim is that's what should be accepted. I'll throw out one more shita, which is worthwhile to note. In terms of the authenticity of it and how well accepted it is, either it's like fully, which is Rav Yaakov and Rav Dessler, maybe the standard approach, versus the other way of learning the Ramban, the other way of learning Shmuel Hanagi, which is how authentic is it? It's as authentic as you want it to be. There's the middle approach, which is the Sefer Eshua, quotes the opinion of Rav Shri Ragon in Hilchos Stam, who writes that the difference is between Agadas that made its way to the Gemara and other Agadas. You find another Agadas somewhere in other Sifrei Drashim and Midrashim, so those have much less weight. However, the Agadas in the Gemara have much more weight. Why that would be true, I don't fully understand. I guess Chazal, when Ravina Rashi put together, it might have been a conscious decision, but I don't know. In any event, let's take around the questions, then we'll move on with the last conversation, which is whether or not Agadas and the Midrashim are Nechshav to be Pshat. Yeah.
You said to the Ramban that you can take if you are addressing this for the debate, it wouldn't really make sense because you used the dignity of Gemara, the same way you said to the Ramban. So you wouldn't have shied down with the negative that you did.
Well, it could be that the Ramban felt more of a need to interpret halachic Gemaras because, A, there are commentary on mitzvos. Probably a lot of that debate was Torah Shebaal Peh. A lot of the debate was when the Chumash says to do all these things, how authentic and real are they, and that type of stuff. While random interpretations, pardon me, the crass language, strong language at least, the random interpretations, the random stories that Ramban feels like, okay, so at the end of the day, the Christians don't understand this, like Mishka Freilich, you know what I'm saying? There is room for distinction. Okay. All right, Agadas and Midrashim, they're considered pshat. Is this how we should read the Pesukim? Yes, no, etc., etc. So it's an unbelievable, unbelievable Rashbam. The Rashbam is in Parshas Vayeshev. He tells a story. He's like, all I came to do, he starts like a little bit of a tangent, telling you what his purpose in Chumash, why he's commenting on Chumash. And the Rashbam there says that really, really the ikar, the central focus of learning is Drash and what Chazal have done. That's why Chazal spent all their time doing it. But that's really what people should be doing. It's really, that's the center, that's the merkaz, that's the ikar, that's the predominant primary way of learning Chumash. However, he says, there is, just because that's the primary one, doesn't mean there's no secondary one. There is a secondary one, and secondary is learning Pshat, and therefore, since there is such an emphasis, such a focus on people learning, Drash, so I'll design my comments to be a Pshat-oriented Perish. That's the first thing he said. Just because Rashbam was a real pshat guy doesn't mean he valued it more. There may have been others. In other words, a lot of the more biblical people, they like to talk about the difference between Ebenezer versus the Rashbam, is that the Rashbam learned pshat but valued drash more, and the Ebenezer valued and learned pshat more, and the Radak as well. The whole history of biblical exegesis 101. We'll get to that another point. In any event, The Rashbam, that's point number one. That is the second thing he has in this Rashbam. He says that, and not only that, but I showed my comment to my grandfather Rashi, and he was so impressed with these what I had to say. He liked it so much that he said if he had more time to write, he would, you know, do this type of stuff that I have. Now, exactly what the Rashbam really means is debated. Mamish mikatsa lakatsa. One extreme is Rashi was chozer completely on his derech alimud. Rashi feels that he was trying his best to do pshat, and his grandson just did better than he did. And, you know, this is what pshat is. Rashi tried to get pshat, and the Rashbam did a better job getting pshat. That's one extreme. Undermines a lot of what Rashi did, although if you read the words, you can definitely pull that out of there. There is a Rashbam in the beginning of Ayikra that seems to talk about how Rashbam says you can't even begin to understand the pasuk until you read Rashi, which seems to undermine this theory. The other extreme theory is, of course, like Rashi told this his grandson, if it's like, you know, your son comes home from school with a little picture of a house, you put it up in the fridge, and you say, good job, you know, wonderful picture, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I had time, I wish I could enjoy this also. And most likely, and this is, now it's in YU, I heard Rabbi Carmi say the following pshat in this Rashbam, is why I was understood it, which is Rashi, or at least, no, one of the good ways of understanding it, I should always insist with this, what he said I think I like, which is that Rashi, you ever wonder why Rashi was so unbelievably successful? Like, everyone learns Chumash Rashi. It's really like, worthwhile to figure out like what made Rashi, to the point where, like, sometimes people confuse what God wrote to what Rashi wrote. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you get into high school, you start looking for the Kipshan Eish story in Chumash, like, you realize it's not there. You know, that's because Rashi told you it was there. You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? Like, how'd God forget that? It's in Rashi. Like, didn't God learn Chumash Rashi? So there are a lot of things that made Rashi so good. His brevity is definitely part of it. Earliness and commentary is part of it. But I think really what did it is Rashi lived in a generation where everyone learned drash, and Rashi tied every drash into the words. Rashi didn't just read out drash and talk about moral messages. He tied it into, he answered textual problems with drash, which at the time may have been revolutionary, as well as balancing. Now, Rashi, in a certain sense, set the ball rolling in terms of the development of pshat. This is what I call me theory. Once I was in college, I wrote a paper that it could be the question: when did the two different worlds, pshat and drash, were developed? When I was in college, I once wanted to tie it back to Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, and once Unkelus versus Yonatan ben Uzziel. I'm not mistaken. That was my theory, that you can find pshat and drash dating all the way back to Tanoim. In any event, Rabbi Carmi was suggesting the development of pshat, whether my theory is correct or just it was lost and regained, who knows what. He thought the Rashbam was taking the next stage, and Rashi was impressed with his grandson's second step, how it's not just midrashic answers to textual problems, it's textual answers to textual problems, and therefore Rashi didn't chas v'shalom undermine what he was doing, but he thought it was another worthwhile endeavor. He liked both pshat, and he thought they were both needed and made nice contributions. In any event, you see from the Rashbam that the pshat, the there is a value, and even the predominant value is for drash, yet nonetheless there's a pshat which has its own value independent of drash, independent of these agadas. There's the pshuta kimashmo, what the words and the pasuk say is what they mean. And the Rashbam a lot of times explains this type of thing. The Rashbam explains a couple like earth-shattering Rashbam. The Rashbam says in the pasuk, that doesn't mean put on tefillin. The pshuta kimashmo is know these words as well as if they were written on your hand and on your forehead, in between your eyes. That's drash. Halacha follows drash. We're talking about pshat here. The Rashbam writes that the 11 brothers, never sold Yosef. If you look at the pasuk carefully, their brother, they left. And then the pasuk says, Yishmaelim or Majanim, I forgot, passed by, v'yimshichu, and they pulled him out. And Rashi says, v'yimshichu is the brothers. It's like, the Rashbam's like, if you look at the pasuk, it doesn't say that. It has no problem with revolutionary conclusions. The Ibn Ezra, although the pshat oriented, the pshat school of thought, but slightly differently, right? The Jews never passed through the Amsif. They went in. The Mitzvah followed them in. The water closed up, fully encircling the Jews in water, opened back up, and the Jews exited the same side they went in. And he has all sorts of textual proof that this is the pshat. And creative stuff, like all the stuff you thought you know about Judaism, turns out not to be true. Jews never passed through the water, brothers never sold Yosef, what's next, right? However, there are Mefarshim out there, Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, and others who say this is the Pshat. Drash is wonderful, has all sorts of, like the Rambam had said, wonderful messages, but there's a difference between them. And then you have other thinkers out there, like the Yavetz, who writes, I don't understand why the Radak mistakenly interprets all the Pesukim based upon their simplest meaning. Doesn't he know that Chazal already told us what the Pesukim mean? Don't we know what the emes is? Chazal told us, like, what's he doing? Like, creating new pshatim. It's true, you're reading the word Pshitach Meshmo, but like, if that be the case, then why would Chazal have spent all that time and energy telling us what the Pesukim really mean? Seemingly, against the Rashbam and Ebenezer. And therefore, again, in terms of distinguishing between Pshat and Drash, the value of Drash, where it comes from and whatnot, how to learn Haggadah, really there's different schools out there. The one I was educated with is much more of the Rosham Shafal Hirsch, and Rashbam Mahalath. That's just how my Rebbeim taught me. But it's worthwhile to get a good gauge of it out there, but different styles of how to understand Haggadah. One last conclusion, I'll take around the questions. There is a little bit of a hybrid sheet, and that's the Orach Chaim. The Orach Chaim says in a few places, Gracious Aleph Aleph, Dvarim Lamed Beis Aleph. The Orach Chaim writes, although, and in Vayikra Chavav Gimel, although he says, especially in Vayikra, a God that was given at Har Sinai, nonetheless, we have the right to interpret Pshuta Kimashmel anyway, since the Hashem Panim HaTorah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, enabled us, gave us the gift of biblical interpretation on our own, to allow us to write and create and say our own stuff, even though there's certain things he wanted us to get from our Sinai. There's certain things he wanted us to create also, which really is a perplexing sheep in and of itself. God gave us some, he wanted our own interpretation, like Miman Avshach, right? If there's certain things he wants to give it to us, if you want to give it to your own interpretation, tell us what the Pesukim mean. If not, so let us up interpret it, like what's going on here. I think the answer is, Ashkav probably mentioned earlier on, by the way, you see it's a hybrid, it's a combination of both. But the svara for such an Orach Chaim is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us direction and how to learn, but wanted to enable us to be creative as well. It's this balance of the checks and balances of the Torah system. On one hand, he wants man to be thoughtful and thinking and analyzing and asking questions and giving answers that he subscribes to and values to deep, so it can inculcate deep into who he is. Yet, at the other hand, he wants to be enough direction that there's a certain checks and balances system on Torah. On one hand, there's enough flexibility and room for creativity, so man should think and ask and answer, etc. On the other hand, enough rigidity and inflexibility that it shouldn't be totally undermined, and there should be a certain mahalach and derech Torah that exists. Question? Yeah.
This idea of drash is applied to Sod.
I feel bad telling you this, but I don't know anything about Sod. So maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. My Rebbeim I was only Zohar to figure on my own and have Rebbeim teach me a little bit about Pshat, a little bit about Drash. Remes and Sod, I don't know. And I'm a little bit even scared to say there's a good chance I'm saying the exact same thing 50 years from now. I'd love to really understand Remes and Sod on a deep level. Is the Baal Turim Remes and Sod? I don't know what it is. Is it like gematrias and Rashi tables, like the Baal Turim stuff, like discovery codes? I don't know what Remes and Sod are. Is that one of them both? I just don't know. I just don't know anything about Remes or anything about Sod. Sorry to bust your bubble and confess my amoratis. And I mean this sincerely. I'm scared that not only do I not know anything about it, but like I don't even know how to like begin to. Begin to figure out like where I'd be able to get a mahalach from that stuff.
Okay.
It's sad. Like I really bothered me that. There's a good chance to live the whole life and not understand Remes.
It's about certain stuff. It's about the table and about things. Could that be taken as pshat? Can that be?
Well, if it's Remes or soda, it wouldn't be pshat.
Yeah, like as pshat, like.
Can I understand your question? I don't know what gematria is. If the Remes are sold, then they're not pshat. If not, then I'm not sure what they're either. They're just not Remes or sold. I don't know. Maybe they're drash. I wouldn't call. I don't think most Russian tables and Sophie tables and
Gematria, that's probably not most of them in the same shot. I don't think so. Maybe it's Drash, maybe it's Remez, maybe it's Soda. I really don't know. Yeah.
The way I was taught with Remez is that Remez is more like the Kabbalah, like the Zohar, the underlying, it's like Hasidus a little bit.
Okay.
I was taught Remez.
Could be. I don't know. Maybe. All right, guys. Next we'll talk about suffering and evil and Tadak Aralo. How is your suffering in the world? Why would a good guy create badness in the world? Yeah, what's up?
How do you think that Halacha was learned out of
Usually, you don't. Usually, they learned that in drushes from Sukkim. What if I call him my God? My God is like, how did you know that? You know, Adam. You know, I don't know. And Chava, really one person. There are a few halachas, if any, that are learned out of that. We do make drushes for the extra psukim, and that's definitely true. We accept those on a halachic level, but Agad is not really like drushes. Definitely some of the drushes are Agad. Agad is much more of, the pasuk says the following thing, and in a non-halachic way, we'll just reinterpret it in all sorts of things that the pasuk doesn't say it is. It's like the Gemara being super about the fingers and earlobes, why you put your fingers in your ears, like, you know, how seriously do you take those things? Where the pasuk talks about hands and fingers and that type of thing, you know, how seriously do you take those? You know, Mitzvah Shem will get the Daf Ches and a whole bunch of Agadas over there. Like, how do you deal with a lot of different stuff out there? What do you do with it?
And how do you
think
like stories are like when the Rebbeim bumped into Eliyahu and
Yisrael? Yeah, there'd be nothing bumped into Eliyahu. Then after
the Rebbeim, you don't do this.
Yeah, did it happen literally or not? So the Rambam probably say it didn't happen literally. So that this, you know, Hashkafic message is supposed to derive from that. You know, certainly the guys would be taking a look. I gotta be around them, so we'll probably not take that one literally. Let's use the Kipshin Eshta, which is really a great example. Do you know what it must be to, if I give you a mission to try to convince everyone in this yeshiva to become Buddhist, how successful do you think you'd be? Yeah, particularly unsuccessful. You have to realize, Avraham Avinu was dealing in a polytheist world as a single-handed monotheist. Do you know how much of a mission, how difficult it was? Do you realize the sacrifices Avraham had to take? Do you realize the courage and bravery Avraham had to develop? The only way you can begin to understand how committed Avraham was and what he was willing to sacrifice, how he was willing to put his life on the line for his beliefs, is the story of Kipshin Eshta. You can't begin to understand Avraham's commitment to Mesiras Nefesh until it's put into a story for little children. And then you begin to say, wow, Avraham really stood up against the whole world. And if the Medrash would not have been given that way, you would have missed that message completely. The Red Chumash should not appreciate Avraham's tremendous character development and commitment, his tremendous Mesiras Nefesh and what he's willing to sacrifice to bring truth to the world. Even before he knew what, if it was God or not. That's the point you'd miss. And therefore, Chazal, quote-unquote, may have made up this story to help illustrate or demonstrate certain character traits that the non-deep Chumash learning person would have missed. You don't realize the tremendous chesed Avraham may have portrayed in just the story of the three angels. And therefore, Chazal talk about him having a tent and inviting in guests and teaching them Torah and the love and care he had for them. He may not have picked it up in the nuances between how Avraham greeted the angels versus Lot. Or Kechom, Hayom, and their details. Pshat, people who are really creative these days are doing all sorts of unbelievable stuff showing how Chazal and all their messages really are just reflections of ideas that come from Pshat. A lot of them. And there's really a lot of truth there. Yeah?
If all the guys that come from the Torah and the idea that according to some
of the
people
in the
research, that
the guy
thought is not true, also comes from
the Torah. I don't think
it was
not true. Not literally.
Okay.
Isn't that
problematic? If the ideal line of guys that is to teach you, is to try to relate to what extent they had mysterious message or whatever. And then, but the whole time you're reading it, you're like, this happened. Like, I think it kind of killed the idea of the whole thing.
Well, for starters, I wouldn't read it Medrash with the idea of this didn't happen, number one. I don't think that's designed to be read. Number two is, the way you should be reading it is, I don't know if it happened, but what are Chazal's message? The ideas are definitely true, whether or not the stories are literal. The ideas are definitely true. And if you're really good, and again, people are doing it more and more these days, they're finding all the deeper messages that Chazal put into Medrash in the Pshat, and they're kind of connecting those two points.
So really, like, you're really not even, you're supposed to look for the underlying message, and you're not supposed to focus on the details of the
story. I don't know if I'd go that far either. I would say, learn Pshat really well, learn Drash really well, figure out the messages, the hashkaf, the ideology Chazal want us to get, and if you can figure out how Chazal saw this drashim from the text, that'd be even better. And therefore, that's it. Three goals of learning. Learn Pshat for its own right, learn Drash for the messages and ideals Chazal are trying to tell us, and number three is if you can figure out where Chazal got those ideas from, well, that's even cooler. I'm going to end here and take a bunch of questions, because there's no good reason why I should have everyone else stick around. I'm just going to stick around Haki afterwards anyway. So, Mirza Shamos.